Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 55 of season 5 of Movie on Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is Hal Bryan. Welcome back to the show, Hal, from the Rocketeer Minute.
It's great to be back, Rob. This has been a lot of fun nerding out about airplane stuff all week.
Yeah. It really has. This has been such a fun week. I've learned so much about aviation that I didn't think I would even be able to understand. I mean, don't give me a test.
Well, we'll see.
I don't know.
The show's not over yet.
That's right. That is true. That is true. So minute 55 begins with John still waiting for an answer, and ends with John landing on his feet. So yesterday we ended things with Stuart starting to let his plan move forward. You know, he recalibrated the ILS system, or he recalibrated the fictional ILS system. And, you know, John is starting to figure out what's going on. And, you know, he ends yesterday's minute by saying, "Why are they listening to him?" And Barnes responds, "It's our frequency. Why shouldn't they?" You know, now, is there a way of verifying that you're actually talking to the tower?
You know, that's a good question.
I like to other have than, good questions.
Yeah. Well, that's good. So basically, you know, that line, actually, it's our frequency. Why wouldn't they? Is actually, you know, quite accurate. You know, one of the things that so many movies get wrong about radio transmissions, and whether we're talking airplanes or, you know, if we're on the car in a police or on the ground in a police car or something like that, is that these are asynchronous communications, so that if someone is transmitting, unless their signal is extremely weak and yours is extremely strong, there's no concept of sort of interrupting anybody. So in this case, you know, whoever's on the frequency doing the talking. Now, the way you would tell is you know, if it's some little kid who's, you know, borrowed his dad's UHF transceiver we were talking about earlier in the week and tunes in the tower frequency and keys the mic and just says, "Well, hi, everybody, it's Billy," you know, then, okay, obviously they're going to know that's not legitimate, but it's, and you're going to be able to tell by the quality of the and sound of the transmission. You'd be able to tell if it's somebody on a handheld versus somebody in an airplane versus somebody in a control tower who sounds nice and clear. But if, you know, honestly, if you had a strong enough transmitter and somebody who knew who spoke the language of aviation radio chatter, I don't know how you would tell.
Okay. All right. That's fair. That's good. That means that what they're doing here is very plausible. So I'm glad to know that. You know, that, I mean, it also makes sense to say, you know, why wouldn't, if you're talking on our frequency, then why wouldn't it be like if you were to call up someone and it would see on, you know, you'd see that it says on caller ID that, you know, it's Hal calling Rob. So why wouldn't I believe it's you?
You know, right. That type of thing. Yeah. And then, you know, the guy on the other end talks about movies and podcasting and everything else.
So it must
sure,
be.
I'm going to assume it's.
Of course.
In fact, be. I have to say, Rob. I am right now. I am assuming that I'm talking to Movie Rob, and have been all week. I may find out that the real Movie Rob is tied up in the trunk of a car, and I've been speaking with an imposter.
But wouldn't the imposter know as much about all the crap I know about? I don't know.
If the imposter was an extremely dedicated and well prepared terrorist, then I got to say it's plausible, Rob.
All right.
That's
well,
not likely.
That's fair. That's fair. I don't know why someone would be interested in using terrorism to take over my podcast, but, hey, if this is the season, if you're going to do it, this is the season to do it. Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, you could have done it 2 seasons ago and you could probably do it 2 seasons from now, but you know, for the time being this, you know, there's no time like the present. If that's what you're going to do.
Right.
So that makes sense. And then the shot goes back to the pilot. And, you know, we get Cole Meany once again going, "Dulles, this is Windsor 114. And then John, it switches back to John, and John screams, "Barnes!" And then we see that John throws the cell phone to Barnes and then runs towards him as he's doing it. And then Stuart continues with his lie, I guess you can say, as the script said yesterday. This is Dulles Tower. We have radar contact. Now, do you think, I mean, you told me earlier in the week that this is supposed to be someone else. I've never picked up on it. Is Stuart using a different accent or a different voice to pretend that it's a different person?
You know, I think maybe he is, because that would immediately raise a flag. You know, if you think about it, I mean, even, you know, even what we're doing right now, we're talking to each other, you know, a zillion miles apart over Skype. You know, if you, you know, the next person you connect with is going to be in a different room with different acoustics. And when you're doing your podcast, and then maybe they've got a different brand microphone, or they don't sit as close or as far away as I do, you know, all these sort of things, there's a whole sort of texture and flavor to the sound in addition to just the voice. But I think he's doing a bit of a voice and trying to disguise and trying to identify the fact that, yeah, you've been handed off. You've gone from, you know, Approach was handling you. Now you're close enough to the airport that you're handed off to the tower. But I would think that, you know, maybe some of these other factors might come into play. And it's, I don't know if I'm articulating it very well, but it'd even be the kind of thing where, you know, you're talking with one controller. When they key the mic, even before they've said something, a lot of times you can kind of just mentally tell that's going to be that this controller again, because, you know, just sort of the way the room sounds, or a little extra tone in the radio or something like that. But if certainly if it sounded like not only like it was the same, you know, same quality and tone and everything else, but also sounded like the same person, that would be a huge red flag.
Okay, that makes sense. So, I mean, we talked about the fact that it doesn't specifically say, you know, that he's a different person. You know, he just continues the conversation, but, you know, it is, you can possibly hear that his voice is a little different. Like, it was maybe a little more of a southern drawl beforehand, and now right. There's less of that, you know.
Yeah. And just the fact that he's, you know, specifically identifying, you know, this is Dulles Tower.
That's right.
And, you know, I think establishing that, okay, the pilot would be expecting to talk to a different person in a different role than, you know, physically in a different building. So when he says that, I think I just sort of rolled with it and say, well, he's, even if it's not super obvious, he's not going from one sort of exaggerated accent to another exaggerated accent or something. I think it's just I've always taken it as read that, yeah, he's doing something with his voice.
Right. Okay. All right. That makes sense. So, you know, as we're listening to this, we see John getting into action, basically. John, you know, he runs towards like a drop cloth and starts ripping it up, and he picks it up, and he picks up a few poles. And then he starts fiddling around with a whole bunch of canisters or cans, and he picks one up that I'm assuming is like turpentine or something like that. And then Barnes, then he screams to Barnes, "Give me your coat." And then Barnes says, "What are you going to do?" "Whatever I can." And, you know, we see once again the plane descending, and it's very cloudy. Now, is it usually this cloudy when there's snow?
It can be.
Because it looks more like fog than
right. Snow. I think they've kind of, you know, maybe exaggerated that a little bit, but you know, heavy snowstorms can bring, I mean, it can bring what they call whiteout conditions and stuff, of course. It does seem to vary a bit, sort of, you know, regionally as well, that you might have a heavy snowstorm, but you're not going to have really, really low clouds. But in this case, you know, it's just, I think it's credible. It's just generally terrible weather,
yep.
Which is why you have an instrument landing system to begin with. And, you know, something I hadn't really thought about was this, and I'm surprised I never did, but this whole plan, behind this, everything here, if Esperanza's flight was coming in, during the day when it was nice weather, because no pilot is going to, you know, when they're on a visual approach where they can see versus an instrument approach where they can't see because of the weather, you know, a pilot's not going to just blindly fly into the ground. They're gonna see the problem right away. But this only works because it's instrument conditions and they can't see, and the fact that it's at night just exacerbates it.
Okay, that's great. I mean, it's great to know that. I mean, so again, that means that D'Souza, when he wrote this, knew that it's much easier to crash a plane like this at night than during the day. So,
right. Yeah, at night and bad weather. So they've already got that going in, and they're completely dependent. Now, a typical airline flight will always effectively almost always fly an instrument approach procedure to some degree, but they can be cleared for, you know, cleared early on for a visual approach when the weather is nice. And then it's, you know, it's largely looking out the window and judging things by what you can see. But once the weather is bad, and as I said, the night makes it worse, you are, you're absolutely beholden to that instrument landing system with the support of the controller.
Right. Okay. Cool. Then we get a shot of the of first the cockpit, and then it jumps to the cabin itself, and we hear the pilot say, "Ladies and gentlemen, as you've probably noticed, we've started our descent. We're sorry for the inconvenience, but we'll all be on the ground in a few minutes." And everyone starts cheering, and he goes, "Thank you. Please keep your seatbelts on." Now, what's great here is, sorry, and he goes, "Thank you." So I was looking at the other two guys in the cockpit, and I was wondering if either of them, I mean, we talked earlier in the week that we recognized Cole Meaning, and we know who he is and stuff like that. I was wondering if either of the other two guys are people that, you know, we could know. So the co-pilot, his name is Stephen Gregory Foster, who only has 10 IMDb credits. And he was on a TV show called Strong Medicine, where he was in 8 episodes. So I really couldn't find very much from that. Then the navigator, though, is an actor by the name of James Lancaster, who has 39 IMDb credits. He was in the movie Gettysburg. He played one of the high officers. He was in the movie Titanic. He played the priest. You know, there's the,
oh, no, yeah, kidding.
There are a few scenes with the priest, you know, towards the end. Also, you hear him talk about, you know, walking to the, as we walk to the Valley of Death. And then, DiCaprio says to him, "How about walking a little faster?" And he has been married to Elizabeth Dennehy, who is the daughter of Brian Dennehy.
Oh, sure.
And she was actually on a bunch of episodes of Star Trek, The Next Generation. She played Ensign Elizabeth Shelby. And in the recent season of Picard, Star Trek Picard, she was actually, I think she played Admiral Elizabeth Shelby. So she was brought back. So I find that really cool that two of the people in the cockpit have Star Trek connections.
Absolutely. I completely forgot that was Brian Dennehy's daughter. That's because,
yes.
I mean, I recognized her in Picard, mm-hmm. immediately as Shelby, and, you know, understood those, yes. callbacks and things. But, yeah, forgot that's Brian Dennehy's daughter, and then had no idea she was married to the navigator from Die Hard, right. 2.
And then we're in the cabin, and the stewardess starts walking through the cabin, and she goes, "Please keep your seatbelts on." And then she turns to a couple that are sitting there, and she says, "Oh, not to worry, we've made arrangements for your next flight, so you won't miss it, okay?" And the guy says, "Thank you." And then she taps a kid on the head and says, "In your seat, please. Come on, in your seat." And then she kneels down next to an elderly woman and says, "Oh, hey, we're just like British Rail, love. We may be late, but we get you there. Don't worry." Now, some of these people are also a little bit familiar. So first of all, one of the stewardesses, we see two stewardesses. One of them is named Amanda Hillwood. And she has actually been married. She's married to Matt Frewer. Do you know who Matt Frewer is?
Oh, Max Headroom. Yes, Mr. Max Headroom That's himself. Right. And I'm drawing a blank. There's something else he's really known for. But anyway, I know him as Max Headroom, first and foremost.
Yeah, no, he's been in a lot of things. I know him actually from The Stand, you know.
Oh, sure.
He played, what's his name? He was also in Watchmen. He was in Dawn of the Dead.
Watchmen, yeah.
You know, he was in Hercules, the Disney movie. He was in 12 Monkeys.
Do that.
He,
Orphan Black was another great one that he was in.
He was in 11 episodes of Orphan Black also. Yeah, so, you know, it's another interesting connection to have here. And then the second stewardess is, her name is Felicity Waterman. Felicity Waterman, right? And she has 26 IMDb credits. And she almost got the lead part in the TV show La Femme Nikita. She it was between her and you know, the woman who actually got the part, and she, for whatever reason, they went the other way, you know, again, she's it's interesting that she's here. It was Peter Wilson got the part for that one.
That's right.
Then in the credits, we actually have someone named Alan Berger, who it just says passenger on this plane, which I don't know who he is, because he does not look like the man with the mustache who's told that he's, you know, that they're going to make their connection. He was born in 1947, and most of his credits on IMDb is in the casting department. He was in the casting department for Junior Kindergarten Cop, Above the Law, My Girl, Young Guns 2. In My Girl 2, he was actually the casting director. You know, so he has a lot of credits here. I guess they just needed someone to fill up one of those seats. And what's interesting is he's not in the casting department in this movie. You know, I would think that if he was in the casting department in this movie, it would make sense to put him in the seat and just say, okay, you know.
Right. Yeah, just give him a little cameo.
Yeah, the elderly woman, I couldn't find out who she is. He was also in the movie Dave, which I love that movie. Oh, sorry, he was the casting director for Dave. I love Dave. That's such a great movie.
Oh, Kevin Kline, yeah. Right, as the president.
That's correct.
Fun film. I haven't seen that one in a million years. Yeah. Wow.
And I mean, I actually like the what they do here, because they, you know, having these conversations with the people on the plane, it you know, makes things even more personal for us to watch things unfold. You know, it'll, you know, next week we'll get this a lot more, but you know, we've now sort of met some of these people. You know, they're not just you know, it's not just a plane with faceless people in it that is in this dire situation. You know, so I like the way they do this. Now
we get a little more invested.
Right. Now I was listening to the commentary by Rennie Harlan, and Rennie Harlan was saying how much he had to fight to get this in the movie. The studio wanted it to be a cargo plane that crashes. They didn't want it to be you know, a passenger plane, and he insisted that it must be a passenger plane in order to, and you must show the people in the plane in order to show how ruthless Stewart really is, and that he's not going to be able to just get away with, you know, with giving them a small little penalty. You know, he's willing to go the distance and do this type of thing. And so he made a deal with the studio. He says, let's put it in and we'll take it to the, you know, when they have the previews for the, you know, where they show the movie to a whole bunch of different, you know, people to get their opinion on it. He says, let's see what they say. And apparently they all said that, or the majority, the responses they got was, is that it's great that they do that, because, you know, it raises the stakes. You know, it makes us realize how much of, you know, who we're dealing with here and what we're dealing with. So, you know, he right. said that on the one hand, he feels bad that he made something so violent at the time, but he said it really fit with what he was trying to say about these bad guys, because he says it shows you that you know, you have worthy adversaries here, I guess you can say. That's probably the right term to use for that.
Right. Well, and it makes it puts Bonnie Bedelia.
That's right.
Holly Gennaro McLean puts her in danger, and that raises the stakes for John as well.
That's very true. And then the shot changes where we've left the plane. We're back to seeing John, and we see him rappelling down to the ground via sheets, which I'm amazed at how quickly they were able to tie together all those sheets. But maybe it has to do with the fact that John is so good at dressing wounds. You know, he's able to do this, you know, and you can see.
Although remember, he never did finish tying off the bandage he was working on. So I don't know that he's any great shakes at tying cloth.
Maybe Barnes made the knots here. You know, John brought the equipment and he brought that. And then we can also see on the ground the rest of his equipment that he's thrown down. You know, the stuff that he's taken before. And, you know, Barnes seems to be struggling holding up John. You know, it apparently he's not as strong as you would think. And then John rappels down and actually makes it down to the ground. And that's the way this minute ends. You know, so we'll have to wait until next week to find out what continues to happen. Sorry, Hal, that you won't be here to watch it happen. Maybe we're sparing you. I don't know.
Oh, well, I'll be there in spirit.
All right, that's good. You have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, I think we hit it pretty hard. I do wonder, though, it seems like it was kind of an interesting little joke about the trail. Like, we may be late, but we get you there. And I was always trying to remember, was there anything... Like, it's an obscure little reference to make, especially to a largely American audience. You know, you know what British Rail is or can infer what it is. But, you know, was there anything going on in the news at the time, or were they famous for being late? I seem to remember a lot about British Rail facing a lot of strikes. Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what they're referring to.
Maybe that was it. Yeah. But kind of a quirky little very British joke. You know, to throw it in there.
I thought it was a little quirky also, but I didn't really pay much attention to it. All right, so the script is pretty much the same here, but they do add a few extra things in the mix. You know, so I mean, yesterday we had a few lines that they added here, and today it begins with desperate. McLean runs to the spilled paint, grabs turpentine, rags, pieces of scaffolding. See, I didn't notice that he picks up scaffolding. It looks like he's picking up like these pipes. Or something like that. You know, does it look to you that they're pieces of scaffolding?
Yeah. That was my thought. I'm just going to scrub back through it here again and bring it up. But that was, my best guess was that it was just part of the scaffolding itself.
Because they look like, metal beams or something like that. Maybe metal beams from the scaffold.
Right.
But you know, later on,
yeah.
Later on, if he's lighting them on fire, they're going to get pretty hot.
Right. Yeah. Even with, wrapped in rags, tied by the expert cloth knot tie.
Well, of course, that's what he's here for. that's why we have him, in order for him to be able to tie those knots. Because if he can't tie those knots, who could?
Yeah. But if those are, like, particularly if those are aluminum, which could be the case, you'd think you'd be worried about them melting pretty soon. But then, getting ahead of ourselves, he doesn't need those torches for very long.
But next week he'll use them a little bit, Right. So then Barnes says to him, what are you going to do? And McLean goes, whatever the fuck I can, Barnes, whatever the fuck I can. And then it jumps to the British cockpit with the pilot, giving his little speech. And then it says, the spent and exhausted people react. Some break into applause and cheers of hip hip. But one nice English granny, clearly not an experienced air traveler, still looks tense. A stewardess pauses to pat her shoulder reassuringly. And then she says the British Rail line, "We may be late, but we get you there." McLean from outside, Barnes is holding onto one end of the painter's drop cloth. McLean, now wearing Barnes's coat, drops out of the broken window to the snow below. Then he's a tiny shadow on the white field. He turns and runs across the unlit airport, wind whipping snow quickly hiding him from Barnes. And that's pretty much how that ends for the script. So I like the way they did in the movie. I think it's much better than what they have here in the script. I don't think you need to have McLean say whatever the fuck I can, whatever the fuck I can. You know, just, I don't know.
Right.
I mean, we talked earlier in the week that sometimes, you know, when McLean swears, it works. But this is not one of those cases.
Right. This is not. It's not necessary.
No, not at all. Not at all.
You know, his actions are what punctuate the whole thing. He doesn't have to add another layer on top of it.
Correct. That's very true. Okay. So every Friday I have a segment called "Where Are They Up To This Weekend," where I sort of surprise my guest, unless anyone's been listening. And basically, you know, the idea is, okay, we're right now at minute 55 of this movie. Okay, now most of my guests have their own shows. They've done Movies by Minute podcasts, or some of them have just informed me of what their favorite movies are. And the idea basically behind this little segment is to see how well you actually remember your favorite movies, or the movie that you possibly did minute by minute. So, Hal.
Oh, my God.
Hal, where do you think they are up to at minute 55 in The Rocketeer? What do you think is going on?
Wow. Oh, that's a tough one. That's a great question, too. And, you know, when you're in the thick of recording something like that, you're just doing it incrementally, and it's very rare to step back and think of that. Let's see, so about an hour in. I think we're probably, I'm guessing that we might be getting our first look at the South Seas Club. But I feel like I'm going to be like mortifyingly wrong. So lay it on me.
Okay, well, it's very possible that you are correct. We have, you know, the two main characters up in an attic, and then the door opens below them, and you have two people down at the bottom of a ladder that are talking to them.
Oh,
and then gotcha. And then the Rocketeer, you know, climbs down the ladder and enters the cafe. Is that what it is, or the diner?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So that's actually what's happening.
That's the whole, you know, we don't got a house, Clifford. We got a gazebo. That's that line was right in there in that attic scene. So I was a little bit early. We're not quite to the to the main events at the South Seas Club.
Okay.
So very interesting.
Yeah.
Wonder who our guest was on that episode.
That you would know better.
Probably. Yeah. Here, I'll. Give me 1 second. I'll pull it up. So, okay, it was Billy Campbell.
Oh, so
the Rocketeer himself.
There you go.
Did a lot of those episodes with us. And
all right.
So, wow, minute 55. That's where we were.
Yeah.
You know, and I saw in your show notes where are they now? And I thought, it's, are we going to get an update on, you know, Bruce Willis? Of course, has had some real struggles in his life, or, you know, Bonnie Bedelia. What's she doing? What's William Atherton doing? But no. You got me. That's good.
That's right.
Well played.
All right. And so you want to, for one last time, let everyone know how they can get in touch with you.
Absolutely. You can hear me on the Rocketeer Minute at therocketeerminute.com. And I'm also a frequent host of one of a rotating group of three hosts on EAA's podcast. That's the Experimental Aircraft Association. That podcast is called The Green Dot, and you can find those at inspire.eaa.org. Of course, both podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. The Rocketeer Minute is now on YouTube. Both are on Audible. Just about anywhere you find a podcast, you can find those. And that's probably the best way to do it. I'm all over social media as well. So Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. If somebody really wants to track me down and tell me all the mistakes I've made this week, you can find me that way.
No, why would that? They would actually want to now find you and want to go fly in your plane. Yeah.
That would be fun too. The line forms to the left.
There you go. All right, great. So, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. Hal, thank you very much for joining me this week. I've had a lot of fun. I've learned a lot. I hope you have too. Not about aviation.
Hey, I've learned a lot. I've been tested. I haven't always passed, but that's okay. That's how we learn. And it's been a lot of fun, Robin. I really appreciate you having me.
All right. I appreciate it. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here,